C tiers. There's a whole conversation that was happening in the Discord that's like, okay, we need a better name for us than C T E R S. Like
C tiers. Yeah. C tiers. We're all from Connecticut.
Yeah. We're all like C tier hackers.
We're all C tier hackers. Yeah.
Hey guys, real quick, I just wanted to tell you about our sponsor, ThreatLocker. Now wait, before you hit the skip forward button, let me just say this. Most of the stuff that holds my attention nowadays is Red Team stuff as well. But I sat down with the ThreatLocker team this past week to do a demo of their EDR software, and it was super technically fascinating how this thing works. So check this out. You drop this thing on a system, right? And for the first week or so, it's creating a policy and a profile for that system. It's logging all the executables, what child processes are being spawned, the files and their hashes, that sort of thing. And it's creating this policy, okay? Then after the learning mode is up, we're in secured mode, and that policy gets put into place. And anything that's not on that allow list is immediately auto-denied. That's the zero trust piece, right? So in addition to that, they've got a bunch of crazy features like ring fencing and dynamic access controls that would stop a malicious hacker at pretty much every step along the way. Actually, I was watching this demo and I was kind of freaked out because I have no idea how I would cope with getting dropped into a ThreatLocker system as a red teamer. Anyway, if you want to learn more about this, head over to ThreatLocker.com and request a demo. And when you do, ask for my boy Andrew. His demo was super to the point and he was able to answer all my technical questions. All right, cool. Back to the show.
What the fuck do you have?
Plop. 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 You hear that, Joel? You hear that? That's a brainstorm coming. That is the rain.
Wow, that was... Are we going to keep that? Dude, yeah. Dude, Justin like hyped this up. He's like, dude, I got the best intro. Like, wait till you hear this. Okay.
You know, because, but it's like, I made the voice, you know, I did the sound with my mouth, you know, for the brain training, you know, and then it's a brainstorm. You see what I'm saying?
I thought we were talking about toilets again in the beginning.
No, we're not doing it. We're not doing it. All right, dude. Ready for a brainstorm episode?
I guess so. Yeah. Dude, right. Did you have thunderstorms yesterday? Because we had thunderstorms. I thought that's why you brought that up.
No. My house is not leaking. Everything is good. I just, you know, the amount of valuable information that is just raining out of our brains right now.
Raining.
It just needed to be vocalized.
Yes.
All right. Well, thanks for bearing with me there, Joel, for that. So we're going to brainstorm today on... various types of plugins, extensions, Chrome extensions, Kaido extensions, Burp extensions, man in the middle proxy extensions, all these sort of things. But before we get to that, man, Gareth Hayes just tweeted something out, dude. And you know when Gareth Hayes tweets something out, your boy is on it, like hair on a gorilla.
Yeah, so he's one of the few people who I have tweet notifications turned on for.
Yeah.
Along with the Critical Thinking podcast.
Critical. Oh man.
Anyways,
we've been getting a little goofy lately, haven't we?
This is not good, dude.
This in.
Okay. But anyways, I like went and I sat down on the toilet and and I pulled my phone out, and sure enough, I have all these tweet notifications from Gareth Hayes. Mm-hmm. And he's tweeted some crazy big brain. I don't even know what is this, a zero day weird, you know, behavior.
Let me clarify on this, because I saw this and I was like, wait, what the heck? This is super weird. I hadn't even understood this. And then like Johan Carlson pops in there and he's like, this is like kind of cool, but pretty normal. But let me add some context to this, okay? So the tweet that Gareth tweeted out that we're talking about is essentially just an A tag that he tweeted out. And the A tag's href is a slash and then ampersand bsol semicolon, right? So it's an HTML entity, bsol, which apparently is for backslash. I don't know why it's bsol. And then he uses like a negative medium space entity as well, HTML entity, and then you know, provides shazzr.co.uk as the domain where this href should be going to. And when you click on this link, it goes to Shazzr, and it doesn't start with //. And so like, here's the thing with this is like, there's always so many times we've talked about it time and time again on the pod where you're trying to fuzz for a way to get around a redirect URI or something like that in an OAuth flow, or get the some like iframe source attribute to like point to a different host rather than a relative URL within the host, right? And I think this is just another great way to get around it. And somehow I just hadn't fully formulated in my brain that we can use HTML entities inside of these HTML attributes like this. And especially, you know, with the research that came out from the RCE man that we covered on the pod a long time ago, about like the different types of HTML entities that have kind of been overlooked, and Shazzr, you know, whipped up a whole list of all these crazy HTML entities that we hadn't heard of before. This is just becoming more important in my brain. Is like, okay, how can we utilize these sort of underserved, underknown HTML entities to break out of these various contexts inside of an HTML attribute? And I think that's exactly what he does here.
Yeah, for sure. I just posted a link in the doc. We'll include it in the references. But Wikipedia actually has a really good table I found that has like just a list of all the XML and HTML character entities.
Jeez, there's a ton, dude. I did not know this.
Yeah, there's a ton. There's a ton of like really weird ones, including like, you know, special characters and all sorts of stuff, like soul and back soul, B soul, like you like you said. There's also like fraction slash, so maybe like frasl, so maybe that would get normalized somewhere somehow. So there's a lot of really interesting stuff.
Yeah, but that slash is not Unicode code point 002f. That's Unicode code point 2044. Right. So that's like a non ASCII. Yeah. A non-ASCII character there. So, man, there's a lot of really interesting stuff here. I think, man, there's just so many. Dude, I'm like scrolling on how many entities there are here. And I'm sure there's going to be a bunch of other bugs relating to this. But the attack vector that came to my mind and came to the mind of Hakupiku in the reverse order there, right? Like when I saw it, I was like, oh man, this is going to be really helpful in redirects. And then like 10 minutes later, Hakupiku messages me and he's like, hey man, this is really helpful in OAuth flows. Because what you can do is you can set the response type to form post, right? And the way that that works is then it'll generate an HTML element. So if you have an OAuth flow that's going to return a code or whatever, like normal OAuth does, if you set the response type to form post, instead of like 302ing, what it'll do is generate a HTML page with a form, and it's going to set the action on that form to be whatever your redirect URL is. So if you're able to specify a relative URL, you know, and they're saying, all right, as long as it starts with slash and it doesn't, you know, have a backslash or a forward slash next to it, then we're fine. Then you can use this sort of entity, this ampersand B sol semicolon, to bypass that flow and actually redirect to an absolute URL, or I guess more specifically a protocol relative URL, and then leak that code out to another domain that isn't within that redirect URI flow. So my prediction, and I think Hakupiku's prediction as well, is that this will affect a lot of OAuth flows, specifically in the form post environment.
Yeah, this is really interesting, and I don't want to spoil too much, but I have a thought that I see has already been thought ahead of my thought. So about something related to this.
What is your? You're just not going to say it on the
pod?
Well,
it's an extension idea.
Oh, really? Okay, there you go. Yeah, all right.
It's something that's in the list, too. It's already in the list.
It is in the list. I did put that in the list.
I was like, this would be a good idea. And then I went and I looked and I was like, this is already a thing. So yeah, we'll talk about it later. But
yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, that sounds great. very cool stuff there. TLDR of that whole situation, there's a bunch of weird HTML attributes out, or HTML entities out there. You should know them, and definitely check out the Shazzer results for all the fuzzing of HTML entities that Gareth's been doing, because lots of weird stuff is coming out of that. All right, what's this next one on the list, Joel? There's a link on the list from Joel.
From me. This is revolutionary. Okay. So Chris Evans, who is the CISO over at HackerOne, tweeted out that they are making a change to the HackerOne leaderboard. And now HackerOne leaderboards are separated based on bug bounty program reputation, vulnerability disclosure program reputation, and then both together. And by default, it shows just the bug bounty program reputation in the leaderboard. So now VDPs, if you're farming on VDPs, that's not going to boost you in the default leaderboard. It will boost you in the separate and combined leaderboards for VDPs and both, but the default leaderboard is the bug bounty program leaderboard, and that's where you're going to have the most reputation.
I like that they broke it out, and then I like that they made bug bounty program the default. And I wonder how this is going to show up on your profile as well, because I think, you know, the HackerOne leaderboards is great for essentially us folks that are really in the HackerOne environment, and we like go there and we want to compete and want to see where we're at and that sort of thing. But I think for a lot of people, the profile is the bigger measure. Like being able to have, you know, HackerOne.com/RhinoRater, you go there, you see, oh, Justin's, you know, I don't know, this month I'm probably like not even in the top 100 or whatever, because I've been doing so much things for the critical thinkers. But you know, like that view that's in the on the profile, I think is going to be super duper important. Like what is being highlighted there, and what metric says, okay, in the last 90 days, Justin is you know, in the top 50 or whatever as far as a bug bounty reputation goes.
Yeah, and I think I may have said that it already is that they already made the change. It's planned. I don't know when it's planning on being rolled out. This was just tweeted less than 24 hours ago yesterday. Okay. So yeah, it's still, I don't know, but there's a screenshot. So they're definitely like engineering it to some extent. It's probably going to come out within the next couple of weeks. So pretty soon.
Well, this is, you know, this is the result of that whole conversation that started a while back with Nogli, I think, tweeting something out and starting a fire like he always does. and yeah, so it's good to see that them actually following through on this. And then it also just shows like how long it takes to get like a markup of what this UI change should look like in these bigger organizations sometimes, man. And, you know, that's the world of software engineering. I always think things should take less long than they do, but it is what it is.
Yeah, you never know. You never know. It's always impossible to plan these things properly.
Yeah, for sure. Alrighty, man. Cool. Well, let's get into the storm. Let the thunder begin.
It's cracking. And
yeah, exactly. Let's start brainstorming. Okay, so I'll start out with a couple, and then you, like in true Joel style, we can, you know, you can just take those ideas and make them better and bounce off of it. Okay.
Sure.
So, first one that I wanted to talk about, is I think that a 403 bypassing workflow in Kaito is something that I really want to work on. And here, and obviously I know that there's a 403 bypasser plugin in Burp Suite. Okay. And if you look at that plugin, it does, you know, it shows all these like path traversal things that it will do. And it lists like maybe 8 things that it will try in there. And here's the problem with that is I feel like this needs to be custom for each person. Because I there's a ton of tricks that I know that are not in this 403 bypasser extension, right? And if I have this 403 bypasser extension, I'm going to see a 403 and I'm going to right click on it. I'm going to say trigger the 403 bypasser extension. And then it's going to do its thing. And then I'm going to assume that it tried the things and it's not. So this is one of the things that I really like about Kaito is like, for one, there's a lot of ground that Kaito has to make up on the plugin space. And we're moving towards it. We're knocking it out. It'll be there probably within the next year or so. But I think that one of the areas where it shines is this whole concept of custom automation, right? Not everybody has the time to go break out their Java environment and build their own custom burp plugins that are like super hard to write and you're using this language and it's just, ugh. Whereas with Kaito, you've got the low-code, no-code interface for automation. You can easily say, okay, hey, I want to take the request. I want to do URL encoding on the last portion of the path, right? And I want to resend that request. And I want an alert if that response is different than the response that I send without URL encoding that, right? This is a classic 403 bypassing technique, right? So I think there's a lot of merit to having your own 403 bypassing methodology automated and implemented in a workflow, or if you are a diehard burp fan, in your own burp extension. Because those things that you know about how to bypass 403s or that you have experience with about how to get around a certain control, that's what makes you unique as a hacker. And that's what you need to automate.
Yeah, for sure. I think generally speaking, there's a lot of plugins that need to be ported over. And there's a couple that we're going to talk about specifically.
Yeah.
So that are like really great plugins that should be ported over. And I think probably some of them might be able to be made work a lot easier. Like Kaito, you can call shell commands. So if you really want, and it's written in Python, which a lot of them are to work with Jython, like you could just take the core functionality of that plugin, put it in a separate Python file, call it out directly from Kaito in a workflow and just, you know, call it a day. Don't bother making it more complicated than that. But I think some are definitely a little more complicated than that and a lot more involved, or they have UI components and stuff like that that need to be converted over. Once those things can be ported over, it's going to be huge.
Yeah. And I don't know that I mentioned this to you, but there's a, probably by the time this episode airs, the basic implementation of backend plugins for Kaito will be in place, which will open up the possibilities for creating things like Autorize and Turbo Intruder and all these sort of like a single packet attack based thing, right? All of these sort of key features of burp will be able to be ported over here shortly. And I'm really looking forward to that. And I think that's great. And I think it also creates an opportunity for us to look at these plugins that we've been trusting for years and years and years and say, okay, I've used this tool time and time again. Where are my pain points? And let me make this better when I transition it over to Kaito, you know, or when I transition it over to like a man in the middle proxy extension, like we were talking about, where if you want to write something that is independent of Kaito or independent of burp, right, then maybe man in the middle proxy might be the right solution, where you can just kind of chain these things together and it's a very lightweight intermediate that doesn't cost anything. So yeah, I think there's a lot of ground to cover up there, but I think we're moving towards it. And I really think that whole concept of customized automation to the hacker will become huge.
Yeah, for sure. On that topic, another one that I would love to see is like Hackverter type behavior for Kaito.
Yeah, dude. Okay, so that actually is going to be native and introduced like next week. So definitely by the time this episode airs, that will be released. And okay, essentially, awesome. How it's going to work is there's going to be, you know, there's this whole concept of convert workflows in Kaito, right? You select some range of bytes or whatever, right? And it pipes it into a workflow where you can do all sorts of stuff, manipulate it, encode it, decode it, run JavaScript on it, you know, all that sort of thing. And then essentially that is going to be integrated right into the replay tab, which is the Kaito equivalent of repeater in Kaito. And so essentially, like we use, you know how like an intruder and an automate, you like select a little region where you're going to start brute forcing.
Yep.
So
yeah, with those little like marker things.
Yeah, with the little marker things. So we're going to have the same thing like that in Kaito, where, and it's already built, it just hasn't been released yet, where you select a certain portion and you select a convert workflow that goes along with it. And then when you send that request, it will automatically dump it through that convert workflow, which is going to be absolutely massive for doing some more complicated testing in an environment where like, all right, now I've got to like take it and URL encode it, then base64 encode it, then URL encode the base64, you know, like, and then convert all of the slashes to dashes and like that sort of thing.
I do love how modular the like convert workflow like ideology is. Because you can call other convert workflows from convert workflows.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, you can chain them. Yeah.
So
that'll be it. But I think the whole concept is, you know, around the workflows is you have these little nodes where you can do each individualized pieces along the way in one convert workflow.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And they function kind of as extensions in the same way as well.
Yeah. And so you can write like encapsulated JavaScript in one and then pass it to another one and that sort of thing.
Right. Yeah. Super cool. Super cool.
Yeah. Hackverter will be great. All right. So let me tell you about this one, man. And actually, this one's already implemented, and this one is already released to the critical thinkers, in the Discord. Which, by the way, there have been like 30 plus people that have joined the critical thinkers tier over the past like week. So,
dude, this book you wrote is a killer. It's working, man. It's flying off the shelves.
Bestseller in the bug bounty world.
New York Times.
Top
Reader's Digest.
100 copies sold. You know? I really do appreciate that, all of you that have subscribed over the past week. It's amazing to see. So encouraging. And thank you for all the positive feedback about the full-time bug bounty blueprint. That's been amazing. Yeah, shout out to y'all. But anyway, the extension that I was going to talk about has already been released to the critical thinkers. And essentially, have you ever heard of, what is the name of it? It's like Espanso?
What is Espanso,
Espanso.
Espanso. I have heard of it. Wait, is that the one where you like type something and it converts like what you wrote into...
Yes.
It's like a tool. It's like a piece of software you install, right?
It's like a text expander, right? So I use this all the time. And all of my stuff is in here. It's amazing. And so
you showed me this, and I think you're crazy for using it, by the way, but why? I love you for it. It's just, I don't know. It's very like, old school. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I think we all use it in like our own way. Like I use bash aliases. Like it's, you know, that's like whatever, but this is like global.
Mr.
So that's kind of cool.
Me old school.
Listen, I use autocorrect for this. Okay. Speaking of old school, I don't use any third party software. I create like an auto correct like dictionary entry, and I'll put like my own custom like HTML encoding format, so I'll use like and then like a keyword and then semicolon, and then I'll type that and autocorrect will be like, did you mean this?
And you're like, yes, I did. Well, all right, let me explain to the people who don't even know what this is. So Espanso is a text expander. So essentially I type colon WH1, right, and that automatically replaces that colon WH1 with RhinoRater at WeAreHackerOne, right? So whenever I'm trying to like log into my accounts for testing and stuff like that, I just type colon WH1 and it just populates my name. Yeah.
Here's a weird question.
Yeah.
Does it work on Android emulators? Like through, like if you're typing.
It happens at the keyboard level. So I think it does.
Does it like backspace to like replace?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is pretty cool.
That might work. Yeah. Because normally what I have to do is like I copy something on my clipboard and then I switch tabs like into the window and it transfers the clipboard over and then it's like kind of clunky, but it works.
Yeah, it works. And that's actually,
I'll have to try it.
And that's actually how I implement it. So anyway, I took this concept and I was like, wow, this is great. I want something like this for my HTTP proxy, right? Because I'm constantly going through and I'm like, okay, I've got like Joel's organization ID and then Joel's like account ID and then, you know, and then I'm Justin's account ID, Joel, you know, Justin's organization ID. And you've got all these IDs and all of these like payloads and stuff like that you got to keep track of. And so what you do is I built a plugin where you just essentially highlight some text, hit a keyboard binding and give it a name. And now, you can access that text that was selected, in the replay tab, in any interface in Kaido, by just typing like squiggly line and then the name you gave it, and it automatically backspaces the stuff you wrote and then inserts the stuff that you had selected in the beginning.
Does it use Espanso for this, or is this like a fully within Kaido?
This is native to Kaido. I just wrote it in JavaScript, and it was really easy.
So it's like globally anywhere, or is it just?
What do you, anywhere inside the Kaido interface, because Kaido's front end is all JavaScript, right?
So, oh, gotcha. Okay.
You know, I just wrote a front end plugin that just looks for a selection and waits for this key binding. And then when you hit it, it just pops up an alert box, say, great, you selected the text ABC123. What do you want to name it? And you just type like A or whatever. And then any time you type whatever that squiggly line is, tilde, A, then it backspaces A, backspaces tilde, and replaces it with ABC123.
Okay, so you got me thinking here because I'm using my brain again. Okay, so I still do this sometimes. When I'm testing a really complex API, sometimes I will go through the effort of writing it out into like PAW or Insomnia or Postman or whatever. And I'll actually structure out the API and I'll build out like parts of it, especially if it's something that, like, for instance, OAuth 2 signing, major pain in the ass to do testing on. So if you use like a REST client, oftentimes it'll do the signing and it'll update the header and stuff automatically. Maybe that would be a good kind of plugin in and of itself. But the point is, for like really complex API testing, one of the really nice features I like about these REST clients is they have like the concept of environments, right? So you have like an environment with different variables, and each of those environments, you can switch between the environments, you can define variables, and then you can use those variables throughout your project and you can change them in one place. So like you said, like user ID, for example, like Justin's user ID and Joel's user ID. If I want to do cross account testing, I could create two variables, like account one ID, account two ID, and then you could just swap that in easily in different parts. I don't know if could do that with plugins, but it would be really cool to have some sort of like environment plugin or variables plugin where you could define different variables, and then you could use those throughout, like in your replay tab or wherever you're trying to do testing, and then you could change them in one place. Or you could just have them written down, because I find that a lot of the time when I'm doing testing, especially with cross-account testing for iDoors and stuff, I just have to like write it down in my notes and just like put it at the top of the note and just keep it there, because I don't really have a really good way of doing that sort of testing other than that, and having it defined within the proxy would be really neat.
Yeah, absolutely. And that solves that whole problem of like, okay, your session died and now all of your repeater tabs or your replay tabs or whatever are dead, and now you've got to like copy the cookie in, you know, 15 bajillion times until, you know, until you've repopulated all of your requests and that sort of thing.
Right. Well, and I think it's like one nicer step up from your expand thing as well, because it, again, like you can update it in one place. So if your account gets banned and you have to create a new one and you want to change that, all of your expanded text, that's like just like static within the request, but this would like reference like a variable, so to speak. And then you could just like change it in one place and it would, all of them would still update it dynamically.
Yeah, no, I like that. I like that a lot. And I think that's something that this exact concept is something we've discussed with the Kaido team, of creating this sort of like global variable of sorts that you can use, you know, and automate and replay and that sort of thing. And I would love to see Burp implement something like this too, because at the end of the day, something like this should absolutely exist already. And it's kind of odd that it doesn't. And it should be pretty easy to do. I know that with, you know, with these convert workflows in Kaido, you could sort of hack something like this together where you create a convert workflow that's named like Joel's session.
Yeah, just
cookie.
Returns a string. And
exactly. And so you could sort of hack this together, but I like the idea more so of having like a front end environment drop down or whatever that you can select before you submit a request. Or like maybe it'll be like on the send button for a replay or repeater, it'll have like the send button and then like a little drop down arrow or whatever, right? Where you click that and you say send with Joel's environment or send with Justin's.
Well, and you think about how this could apply to like sessions, for example, like that plugin that updates your session in replay. Mm-hmm. Well, instead you take a request, you highlight your session and you right click and you say, you know, assign to variable session or update variable session. And then all of your requests, instead of having a static cookie, they're referencing the variable called session. And again, it all updates from one place. So, you know, you can dynamically update your requests. You don't have to have big long cookies or whatever in every single request. You just have it reference like session variable and, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's big, man. That's big. I like that. I would love to see that. I think that one might take the cake so far. I mean, I think my Expido tool, like the reason I wrote
it's like a good V0, you know?
Yeah, it's a good V0, and it's like solves a, it scratches an itch that I had in the situation, and it got me a little bit deeper into the Kaido sort of front end plugin environment, which I really liked. But I think there is a lot of room for improvement there. And I think if you were to use something, if they were to implement something natively, like environments and variables and that sort of thing, then that would be massive. And a lot of this would become irrelevant then.
Yeah.
So no, that's really interesting though. Anyway, so regarding that plugin, until that this environment thing comes out, that plugin, I think I'm going to release to the public around DEF CON time. So yeah. Depending
but
on...
But it's already released to Critical Thinkers, right?
It is. It's already released to the Critical Thinkers exclusive content channel. So if you're interested in that, check out ctbb.show/p/discord. I should probably actually make...
/p/discord?
Yeah, because it's like if you do /discord, then it just takes you right to the Discord invite leak. Maybe I'll make like ctbb.show/ctiers. Right? Critical Thinkers? No? Ctiers? There's a whole conversation that was happening in the Discord that's like, okay, we need a better name for us than C-T-E-R-S. Like
Ctiers. Yeah.
Ctiers.
We're all from Connecticut.
Yeah. We're all like C-tier hackers.
We're all C-tier hackers. Yeah. Uh-oh.
Critical Thinkers? /critical thinker? All right. I'm just going to make that. I'm ctbb.show/critical thinkers if you want to get into to that environment. All right. Jeez, okay. Joel, come on. All right. You want to take one or should I take one?
hold on. I'm reading through. Yeah. So this trace cookies one is really interesting. I don't know if you have more information than what's written down here, but let me just spin off it for a second.
Go.
So, based on what it sounds like, it seems, you know, basically just tracing cookies, right? So, I find this really interesting when you're trying to figure out like how login flows work and like what's necessary, what's not necessary. We've talked about this a lot with like cookies, and I'm constantly haunted by whether or not I should be removing my cookies or not because of that one Zoom ATO.
I know,
where I'm probably just missing an entire category of bug. But that being said, being able to trace stuff and figure out like what stuff to be looking at, I find this to be a really interesting category as a whole, and I find myself more and more writing like long filters and stuff in my Kaido to really narrow down what I'm seeing in my proxy so I can focus in on stuff that matters. So like CSS files are really cool, but I don't give a crap about them at all, you know what I mean? Like, well, maybe at some point I will care, you know what I mean? But like most of the time I don't. So the one thing about Kaido, super nice, is everything's recorded regardless, right? Like with Burp, if you have, I mean, the way that I have it configured is when I put stuff in like the scope or whatever, it like completely ignores it from the proxy. So if there's stuff in the past that may have not matched your current scope rules or proxying rules or filters or whatever, then it's completely gone for good. You will never know. But with Kaido, you can bring that back. So maybe later, if I'm looking for CSS, then I can, you know, find it.
Yeah, the way I used to configure Burp as well is like that. And the reason why, and then I stopped doing that once I got this like server that I'm on right now, that I'm the recording Burp this podcast on right now,
huge.
Because, you know, essentially you have to put stuff that's not in your scope. Don't record it in Burp or else it'll just blow everything up and you're going to be, you know,
you have 30 gigs of Google searches.
Exactly. But I think you can afford to not do that in Kaido, which is great. And it does allow you to have that sort of retrospective. You can go back and say, you know what, actually I really need to know every S3 bucket that's ever been referenced by this site, you know, and you can do that sort of thing.
I find the big thing for me is that I will at some point during my hacking find a domain that either wasn't in my like search or in my scope properly or that I didn't know about, and I'll need to add it later, and all the previous requests I now have instead of just like being a completely blank slate and trying to figure out where that's used from then on.
I dig that too, but what I was gonna say with regards to the trace cookie thing is like here's my vision for this. Like I want to be able to select a cookie and say like give me a history of this cookie. And this cookie was like set in this request and reset in this request.
Like the, in Wireshark, like, how you can like follow a packet.
Yeah. Trace route. Is that kind of what you're
Trace in Wireshark, you could, yeah. Trace stream, how you can basically like put together a series of TCP packets.
TCP stream. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. So like something like that. Is that what you're, yeah.
Exactly. And it's a little bit tricky because you don't know whether you don't have a great way without resending every request with every single permutation of cookie to determine whether a specific request needed a cookie or not. Right. So it's a little bit tricky to know what requests exactly needed what cookie. But what I would say is,
trace the updates, right? Like, being used is just like, I mean, generally speaking, if it's being sent in the request, whether or not it's needed, I think cookies are like so broad as a whole that it's really difficult unless you have like, again, like a separate, there is that plugin for Burp, request minimizer. That does, that basically does that. But I think at least the setting part of like following where it's being set, where it's being updated, that you could definitely do pretty easily just based on the server responses and where you have a set cookie header being returned. Mm.
Yeah. So I think creating some sort of mapping, following the lifespan of a cookie would be really interesting. And then also looking at a cookie and saying, okay, when is this value found in the response ever? And just kind of tracing those things as well. And then maybe even integrating. So this kind of goes down to what I was talking about a little bit later in this document, which is it would be really great to have something that seamlessly hooks into the front end in both Kaido and Burp. And Dom Invader sort of does this with Burp. But I think and I'm not a Dom Invader master by any stretch, but I think there's some things to be improved upon in that arena. And I think this could be a really cool one, which is if there is some way for us to determine whether document.cookie is being accessed and then parsed, and then this specific cookie is being utilized by the front end at a specific page and trace back that JavaScript execution, that would be also a really valuable piece of this whole like trace cookie profile that we would build. And man, this sort of introspection would just breed the coolest bugs ever because that's one of the things that's like getting my goat right now is I don't have enough introspection into when a front-end application is looking for a cookie and not finding it, looking for a cookie, finding it and doing something that I don't know about, looking for a query parameter and not finding it, and that sort of thing. So I need to do more DOM hooking to actually understand what's actually happening at the application level. And I want to create some sort of heads up display, either in the browser, just like maybe like I'm thinking like a marquee, toolbar across the top of the browser, or like maybe in Kaido natively or something like that, where it says, this page that you're on, looked for these 8 query parameters. And we know this because we hooked URL search parameters or something like that, right? That tool for parsing out query parameters. So yeah, I guess that's my rant. I would love more introspection into that.
Yeah. And I think it's really interesting. I mean, I think both Kaido and Burp have like their own like browser integration type thing where you can launch a browser and it like auto proxies or whatever. Yeah. I honestly I've had so much trouble like getting behind that just because like I'm very used to like, my certain flows or whatever extensions and stuff that I have set up. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I don't really like doing that. That being said, one thing that I've done, and I don't know if a lot of people do this, is Burp. The only way that I know that you can use Dom Invader is if you use the Burp built-in browser, right? Mm-hmm. But if you look in the way that it works, it actually loads like a dev extension from like a specific folder. You could do that. I use Chrome as my testing browser. So I just, in my profile, I enable dev and I load it from the same folder in my own Chrome instance so that I can continue my testing. And I can also use Dom Invader still. And it works fine. I think like half the tool doesn't work properly because it's not like hooked in, but yeah, it's, I would imagine that Kaido could probably do something similar there. Or, Burp too, where you could have, an extension that you can point your browser to load and that will interface with your proxy at a more deep level where you could do that type of stuff where you're talking about like interfacing with the front end and checking for variables and query parameters and hooking and just wrapping around like all those different types of things.
Yeah, someday, man. I'm really looking forward to that because I think there's so much as I start to understand the web environment a little bit better and I start understanding like, hey, these individual top level pages have so much more encapsulated in them than what comes through the HTTP proxy in modern day web apps because of JavaScript and just how much stuff JavaScript does in so many different spots. And it's not like you can just look at one spot and be like, this is what it does or this is what it doesn't do. You know, there's like all sorts of middleware throughout this whole flow. And so tracing that out would be massive and definitely some massive challenge. I think that'd be really cool. And while we're on the cookie front, let me just talk about this next one really quick. So I have in the doc here, setting cookies that you're not responsible for. So I saw this the other day and it's like a pretty, it's like an informative thing. Like it's not, it doesn't indicate a vuln or anything, but I saw a website, you know, let's call it site.com, setting a cookie where the domain was scoped for like backend.site-dev.com, right? You know, and it's like, and that was in the domain attribute for the cookie. And I was like, that's a little interesting. And you know, you hear people talking about like, look at the CSP headers, like brute force for vhosts, that sort of thing. And this is another area where you can find internal host names that correlate to your application that you may be able to use in other areas is if it's setting a cookie that it's not authoritative for on this specific domain.
Yeah, that's super interesting. Yeah. I wonder if they just did that for like the ease of developer testing or something so that it works on the developer's laptop. I mean,
it's a bug.
It's
a bug. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't an important cookie and that was the name of the backend server and it just like defaulted to whatever it perceived its own host name to be.
Cool.
So, but yeah, I thought that was really interesting.
That is very interesting. One thing that you put in here, but I also expanded on highlighting or bolding base 64 encoded values. So I think that'd be really neat if it just automatically sort of showed you that, you know, this thing is base64 encoded. That's probably a little hard to do accurately, I think. If you just think about like writing a regex second properly and accurately, or any way of, you know, just generically saying, oh, this is base64, as a human we can like eyeball that so much easier honestly. That being said, so you can highlight values and it'll try and auto decode it in both Kaito and Burp. I'd love to see some expansibility for that where we could, you know, write your own decoder, or maybe there's some custom value or encryption that the application's using and you could just like double click on it and you could, you know, specify that you want to use your own custom decoder instead. And again, just pipe this through workflows or something. And you know, just be able to do some extra easier custom decoding without having to constantly like right click or pop something up or whatever.
Yeah. Cause currently in Kaito, to do that, you have to select, then right click, go to the convert workflow and click it. So it's like three clicks if you're going through that whole thing.
Well, and you could see how this could also be awesome with like match and replace rules as well. Yeah. If you could do that, where you could just do a match and replace rule to call a workflow and just say like, okay, if this matches, like select this regex and then pipe
that's
it
exactly
workflow.
What I want them to do too, is like convert workflows and match and replace would be super cool. And then you just define like a regex on the front end and then like a convert workflow to actually like pipe through it. I think that would be really amazing. So I think that one's on the list as well. But what I kind of wanted to see with the base64 encoded values was in Burp, there are some extensions that will be like, hey, this thing is base64 encoded, just FYI, right? And then here's the value. I think that might be even like built into Burp by default or whatever. Huh. Instead of putting that in my findings tab, I would love for that like base64 encoded string to be like underlined or in a different color, or like
where you hover over it,
have some little tooltip or something like that that draws my attention to it, because I'm very rarely when I use Burp going into the findings tab and being like, all right, let me just like check out what's in the informative section, you know, like
it's always when you're having some problem and then at like 3 hours later you go and you check your answer has been sitting there and you're like, oh,
exactly
I didn't have the certificate installed.
Exactly. So I think there's some room for improvement there as far as usability goes, because there are some detectors, but having it underlined or like having a little tooltip on it would be really good. All right, let's see.
I see you wrote GPT integration, but this already exists.
I know it already exists.
They were early on the train.
They were. And I think that there's cool stuff that you can do with Assistant in Kaido, right? And I think that's great. I think there's room for improvement. The reason I say this is because I recently started using Copilot. And Copilot is unbelievable. Like, absolutely unbelievable in VS Code, right? Where you're trying to write some code and you just like write a comment that says like, write this function that reverses the string and XORs it. And then, you know, and then all of a sudden it just, boom, it's there. And I just, wow. Like, how stunning is that? And I think there's lots of ways that we could integrate this into Kaido or to Burp that would be really like friction reducing. So, you know, I'm trying to write out this whole syntax. I can just select the code, you know, this whole bunch and say, do make this modification to it, you know, encode every slash with, you know, double URL encoding and just type that out. And then the AI just does it. Or like, one area that I've said, and actually, we've kind of shouted this out a couple times. There's actually a Kaido plugin for this now, surrounding actually auto renaming. Yeah, it's called AI Replay Rename by Riddle. Like renaming your tabs in Replay in Kaido, based off of and using AI to do that to make an intuitive name. So like, oh, this is the GET request for this endpoint that gets the user information. You know,
and does that use the built-in? Does it use the assistant like backend?
I think
that's
so.
Built
yeah.
in Kaido to do all that.
Okay. Yeah. So there's like a certain number of like token counts you get if you're a Kaido Pro user or whatever.
Yeah.
But I just think after using the Copilot and just being able to like select a bunch of text and then say like fix bug and then just describe what I wanted to change and then have it do it, I just like, wow, we need this in an HTTP proxy.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the big thing would be if they could figure out how to make some sort of assistant that is specifically geared towards that and trained on that type of data. Like,
yeah.
One of the reasons that Copilot is so good at code is that it's specifically geared towards writing code. So it's really, really good at that. And like ChatGPT can write code sometimes.
Well, yeah.
Depends on what it's doing.
I think it's pretty good.
You know, yeah, it's pretty good. But, you know, a lot of time, well, some of the time, definitely will miss because that's not really what it's, you know, designed for. Whereas Copilot is like trained on, you know, GitHub and Stack Overflow data and all that kind of stuff. So it's like very, very specifically designed to write code.
Yeah. Okay. I agree. And I want to say that in addition to that, I think this is one of the few areas where it's like, I wouldn't really say to the Burp team or to the Kaido team, like, hey, you should implement this natively. Like, I think this is something that I would actually pay for as a plugin. Like there's very few plugins that I would like shell out cash for. I don't know why that is because I'm sure some plugins would make me tons of ROI. But like, I don't know. It's just a, now that I'm saying it, it sounds dumb, but you know, like you've got JS Weasel, right? Which is an enterprise product for assessing JS code, right? I think definitely, I haven't purchased it yet, but I think very soon when it meets the capabilities that I'm looking for, that will be a buy. And I think this could also be a buy where it's like, oh, there's a really, really, really high quality AI plugin for Burp and for Kaido. And this is a startup and it costs $30 a month if you want to use it or $50 a month or whatever. And it just reduces friction left and right in your HTTP proxy and allows you to just describe what you want and it just does it, you know? I think that could be a really amazing product.
Super interesting. Yeah. Maybe you shouldn't have said that on the podcast.
You know, I'm here to add value. I'm here to please take my startup idea and do something with it. I would love that. All right, man. I got to bounce. There are a couple more ideas in here. Maybe I'll be late to this next meeting.
Are there any that... all right, I'll tell you what. Pick your top two. Because there is one I still wanted to talk about.
Okay.
How about this? Pick your top one and I'll talk about this one. So the one that I'd mentioned, you mentioned that I think you said Hakupiku was talking about, you know, how this functionality that Gareth had identified is really good for OAuth stuff. Well, I was thinking like right off the bat, I was like, well, there should be a OAuth testing plugin. And then I looked through the list and on the list it says something for attacking OAuth specifically. And then there's a link to this burp plugin called OAuth Scan that it does exactly this. So
yeah,
this is another one of those ones that I mentioned that is probably just a direct port. I don't know if this one's going to be so easy. It looks like it's written in Java and it's like pretty in depth. And it does like a lot of different tests and stuff, but this would be another one of those great ones to port over and get working in Kaido. And in addition to that, maybe add this functionality, customize it a little bit, like you said, to add in this additional scan for this additional, bypass or whatever you want to call it that Gareth described this behavior.
Yeah, no, I think it's great that they have all these, you know, extensions already in Burp. And I think, you know, it's just one of those scenarios where it's like, wow, there's so many pieces that I don't know about, right? So many extension code, you know, pieces of extension code that I don't know how they work. And I should probably just deep dive in and learn how to use it efficiently or whatever. Or I could just write my own because I have to know, I have to have that gut sense anyway as the hacker.
Yeah.
Like this is actually goes to a pretty big hacker topic because I've always wondered like what makes hackers so scrappy? Like why don't we just want to pay for something or why don't we want to just use these tools? Why don't we want to reinvent the wheel every time? And I think the reason for that is because we need to know what is happening, at a low level so that we can feed that gut and that intuition of like this feels like something I should apply this tool to, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm sure there's more to suss out there, but, okay. I'm going to do two. I got to go in 2 minutes, but I'm going to try to cover two more extensions really quickly. Okay. One is I would like some extension that allows you to specify where an API lives and then, makes sure that you have 100% coverage of that API. So let's say I give it a path. I say, okay, all this stuff for, Epic Games lives under epicgames.com/API, right? And essentially, I want to see in my HTTP history, if there is a API endpoint that I'm missing that I haven't sent to repeater or haven't marked as like boring, I want glowing in my HTTP history, you know?
Okay. Yeah. So like coverage, like a reverse target. Where like in Burp, you can have like your target of like things that are under domains of endpoints that belong to that domain. But instead you say, here's all of the endpoints that exist. And it would say, okay, here's a request for every single one of these and then highlight the ones that don't have a request.
Yeah, well, absolutely that. But also when a new one comes through and this is like, you know, one that I haven't sent to replay or haven't marked as boring, I want that like glowing in my HTTP history. Like, hey, there's this new one that you haven't seen that, you know, got bundled in with the 40 other so, like, requests that happened when you went to this page.
Yeah. So like marking a endpoint as like processed or seen basically as well within the scope so that when something new comes up that, you know, you can mark them all as seen, but then you can,
so that I can be sure that I have coverage of all of these API endpoints and I understand every single freaking thing about this application.
Yeah. Cool.
Okay.
Cool.
And then next one, last one is that, man, why is there not good note taking in either Kaido or Burp? Like, how cool would it be to be able to write notes and like reference tab numbers? And like,
bro, there's this notes organizer thing or whatever in Burp. I've tried to use it. I can't even tell you how many times. More than 10. It's never worked. Never. I click the button, nothing happens. I gave up.
Yeah. So it's like, I just feel like this is something that should be super pivotal. And instead we all have like notes.as, you know, astiff.txt or whatever, notes.txt, and that we all just kind of dump stuff into. But man, it would be really, really helpful to be able to like apply a note to a specific path regex or like apply a note to a specific request or just lots of functionality that should be built out surrounding that. All right, cool. That's it. I got to run, but notes, please. Please, notes. Somebody build that.
Notes, at least notes. Yeah.
Exactly. All awesome. Right, man. Good pod.
Cool.
Peace. All right,
catch you later. Peace.
And that's a wrap on this episode of Critical Thinking. Thanks so much for listening. And if you want more Critical Thinking content, head over to ctbb.show/discord. Join the Discord. There's lots of great conversations and chats going on over there. And if you want to support the show, there's the Discord subscriber tiers, which give you access to masterclasses, AMAs, hackalongs, exclusive scripts, and an exclusive chat channel with us. We'll see you there.